welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Saturday, December 21st, 2024. It's just after 18 UTC as we're starting to record. I am Sam Minter. Yvonne Bow is here. And we're doing something a little different this week than our normal. Instead of having our butt first where Yvonne and I just talk about whatever stuff, we have like a guest. So let me introduce... yes, I know. We do that.
We have to be on our best behavior, Sam. We can't treat people.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. Seriously.
We do this every once in a while, but not commonly. So our guest today is Monica Chilton. I'll let her introduce herself more fully in a second. We have her on because she this year was one of Washington State's electors for the Electoral College, which voted this last week. And I thought it would be interesting to have her on and talk a little bit about that. So, Monica, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit more fully?
Yeah. Good morning, Sam. Good morning, Yvonne. Good morning, audience. I'm Monica Chilton. I am one of the two what's called state committee members for the Snohomish County Democrats. I was previously the chair of the Snohomish County Democrats for 4 years, but so I've been in leadership. And actually, after this, I need to log off and go to an executive board meeting for that organization. So always working, as it were, for the volunteer job. I guess we're all a little bit cuckoo for democracy, as it were. So anyway, it's a pleasure to be here this morning. And anything you want to ask, fire away.
Sure. So let's get started. And this, doesn't need to be a formal interview. We can do a sort of conversation, but I'll start off with a few things. Yeah. First of all, I will mention, and I don't know if you know this, Monica, but you are the second elector we had on the show. Because we had on Schiaffalo when he was doing his sort of rogue elector faithless stuff and the Supreme Court case. We talked to him after the Supreme Court case as well.
Right.
And now your situation was a little bit different. You did not like go rogue, I don't believe.
No. And the staff that worked very hard and treated us very nicely was very, very grateful for the lack of drama. So the gallery was substantially not as full as it was in 2016, according to staff. And I think that's because of, again, the lack of drama. And of course, the result was not as we had hoped. So,
well, Monica, one question. You talked about the lack of drama. And we've been talking a little bit about this in recent weeks with people's reaction to the recent election results. Mm-hmm. And I guess, is that your feeling like right now in terms of emotionally that a lot of people are they're like, just, okay, I'm done.
Well, there are people who have more than rung the alarm bell for years and years and years.
Us here.
Right. And Black women. And I know a lot of Black women in person, not your wife, Representative Donaghy, but who've just basically decided, you know what? I'm going to live my best life. I'm going to sip the tea while Rome is burning. And you know what? They have absolutely earned it because I feel like my demographic has just been a bunch of, I freely cop to it. We're Quislings. We have voted for the wrong side, at least according to me, the side that is the autocratic, oligarchic side in the last three elections. And that is just really breathtaking.
You're talking white women specifically.
Yeah, white women.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's just, it's very, very annoying and very, very aggravating. So... But I can see it's been a drama, and we have a whole generation of younger people, especially who didn't have the luxury of, like our generation did, of say a Fairness Doctrine press. So,
oh my God, yeah, I forgot about that.
There is a post Fairness Doctrine press. Mm. There is 24/7 news. There is disinformation and misinformation being spread all over. In all sorts of different ways, slice, dice, whatever, and I'm afraid that the kids kids, you know, I mean, they're adults, but you know, to me, they're kids.
They're kids.
I have a 28-year-old daughter, right?
But let me tell you something. They're more kids than we were. And I, you know, I don't know why we have done this, but I was having this discussion with somebody that I know that their daughter is like 15. And they were asking about going on their first trip by themselves, right? Because they had, and that they were scared of doing that. And I'm remembering that shit. I was,
well, define trip.
I was I'm from Puerto Rico. I went to New York by my. I went to Washington D.C. basically with one chaperone that we never saw for like a couple of weeks. Oh, okay, all right, to Rome.
Amazing, actually.
For like 13, 14. You know, I was 13, 14, and I'm like, and that wasn't, you know. I remember amongst my generation, I'm like, the full disclosure, I'm like, what, 50, Gen X? I'm 54. Mm-hmm. I'm done now. Not yet. I'm turning 54 in February. Let me not get ahead of myself. Not yet. But
I do that too. I attack on the age.
But that wasn't that uncommon back then. It happened a lot. It's not like, it's all, and if somebody heard that it happened, or like, oh, okay, they went, the teenagers, they went on a trip to, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, man, I mean, we barely let them out of the house. I mean,
let me pull us back for a second.
Yeah. But going back to this young generation specifically, yes, that you were talking about and what, you know, that they're kids. I do think that in certain terms, and I've seen, especially sometimes in just the perspectives that they carry sometimes, I feel like, I don't know. It does feel like we've turned them more into kids than they used to be.
Well, I'm not so worried about them. I mean, they care. That's important.
Oh yeah, they care. No, totally.
The thing that worries me is just there's not as much. What do I say? I think we have this fire hose of information and very poorly, relatively poorly developed tools of what I like to call discernment and critical thinking skills, so that younger set, especially, and some of the older set, frankly,
a lot of them.
I was just talking to my wife, who was referring to, she had had a conversation with somebody she knew from way back, who was talking about, you know, the presidential race and things they'd heard about, you know, Harris being the border czar and all this, which wasn't true at all. It never happened. But they were convinced. They were absolutely convinced. Well, I heard it, you know, and so it's definitely a thing. I mean, Yvonne and I have talked about this on here quite a few times in terms of the information environment and how uninformed lots of people are and information silos and all this kind of stuff. But I do want to pull us back real quick to the electric thing. And then maybe we can talk about other stuff for a little bit. Sure. But back in 2016, I went to the state convention and witnessed some of how electors were picked back then. And I had some thoughts. But how were you picked this time around, and has the process changed at all? What do you think about the process to actually choose electors? Because, you know, obviously in 2016, we ended up with a bunch of faithless electors here in Washington State.
Not four.
Yes. Well, that's a bunch. That's one of the biggest number of faithless electors ever.
But that would be a third of, because there were 12 electors. So if that was still the same number of electors, that is a third of the body that would be there.
So have they changed anything in the intervening years? And specifically, how was it done for you? How did you get the spot?
This was actually pretty chill. The state committee had us, if we wanted to, write a bio or a statement of candidacy, that sort of thing. It's just like you're running for an office or an e-board position or anything like that. And I actually wound up penning mine on the anniversary of the Dobbs decision. So I kind of used that as a springboard, you know. So I thought, I try to write something that pulls people in, you know, kind of gets them their thinking rather than, oh, I'm blah, 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 you know, that sort of thing. Something that has some gravitas and some meat for them. But the CD1, that's the first congressional district, the one that I live in, that was pretty interesting, because I didn't realize at the time that I wrote my statement of candidacy, and I thought I was speaking to all of the state committee members who are going to decide. And what really happened was it was the state committee members of that specific congressional district. There was a grand total of 5 of them who decided who was going to be the elector and who was going to be the alternate. And there weren't really a whole heck of a lot of candidates. I think there were like 3 of us. And the CD2 one, that was my former district that I got to redistrict it from. And that was a pretty, I wouldn't say contentious race, but it definitely had a lot of candidates going for those 2 spots. So that would be like the elector and the alternate. And there were some other at-large positions as well. I think CD2 is the one that wound up with an elector. One of the at-large alternates came from CD2. So that's a pretty important congressional district as far as representation. So, but yeah, the state committee members of the congressional district are the ones that select the electors for that to represent their congressional district.
And then there's some statewide, the at-large ones, right?
Yeah, at-large, yeah.
Like in 2016, the at-large ones were picked at the convention, at the state convention. Is that what happened this year as well?
No, that was different. It was all one meeting, all one process. Trying to remember how long it took, maybe a couple hours, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that sounds good. Like that.
And it was all easy.
But this year, no drama versus.
Yeah. The process at the convention in 2016 was the one that really like baffled me. It was like just so chaotic. And so like there were people running for it who didn't know what they were running for. There were people voting for it who didn't know what they were voting for. It was just nuts. And yeah, so what was the actual experience of being an elector? Like, you know, obviously Harris won Washington State and therefore you got to vote, but what are the logistics of being in this position, finding out like where you go win and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So the staff was very good. So there was a point of contact and Stuart Jensen reached out to everybody. So, you know, Stu basically.
Are these like representatives of the actual state or the Democratic Party?
These are actually folks with the Secretary of State's office. So this is all Steve Hobbs's gig. And yeah, so Steve was there and that was great. And anyway, let's see. So yeah, Stu, you know, called all the electors and, you know, made sure that we had like, you know, the per diem expense things, which I just finally filled out yesterday. And, you know, because you get like a per diem for the hotel if you so choose, meals if you so choose.
Because you all have to drive into the state capitol or whatever.
Right. You know. And then, you know, if I came from, I don't know, Walla Walla or Spokane, I could have flown in maybe. So that would be airfare and as well. I can't remember. I think they did rental cars, but I can't remember. But yeah, you get that information, you get the paperwork, and it's all very professional and just very, 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 very good. And you know, the parking pass, you go in, and they had somebody there out there. It was raining like crazy all that whole time, and she's out there with she's humongous golf umbrella. Hannah was to make sure that we were parking in the proper place. Everybody was terrible.
And you physically did it at the state capitol building?
Yeah. So it was really awesome. I mean, I'll never be able to park that close to the state capitol ever again. You know,
you're going to be an elector again.
Right. Well, you know, I would love to be able to be an elector and elect the first liberal Democratic woman president. I qualify. So.
Yeah, well, man. Feels like
and I have to do and I'm going to segue a little bit because
we're good at segueing here. This is the trademark of this show.
They segue. I mean, just completely go off the
yeah yeah yeah.
My personal feeling is that the 2 women who have been the Democratic nominees were in a position where they were almost set up to fail. If you look at the fella from, I think, St. Louis, who had those 13 factors, one of the most interesting things he put in for like Hillary Clinton in particular is how difficult it is for a person of the same party to win a 3rd in a row election. So that was a big thing. And beyond all the other stuff, she still pretty much, I mean, if we had gotten rid of the Electoral College, she would have won. No questions. This thing with Kamala Harris, what, she had less than 120 days to campaign, fewer than 120 days to campaign. Yeah, she went at it like gangbusters, but it was so quick, and there really just wasn't, I don't think, enough time. And, you know, frankly, if I were in a swing state and I got barraged with all that stuff, I probably would have been very tempted to just tune out, you know?
Well, and in the end, it's perceived as like, you know, a big loss simply because, well, A, it's winner take all in these mm-hmm. things. Right. And also, you know, hey, she lost all seven of the swing states, but six of those seven were very close. Mm-hmm. You know, it would have only taken a relatively small number of changed votes for her to win. If you look at popular vote, it was the closest in like forever. Right. You know, so it actually was a close race. She almost pulled it off, but not quite. And there are all kinds of things you can point to. We've had arguments on here mm-hmm. about various factors. I think we're there, and we don't necessarily have to rehash those now.
Sure.
But she was close. And any one of a number of things changed, she could have pulled it off, but she didn't. And that's where we are.
But one thing is that globally, mm-hmm. this is not just here. I was discussing this repeatedly, but there's this entire anti-incumbency thing that isn't just here. And it's an entire mistrust
And she actually did better than any other major country election for the how much was lost by the incumbent party. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, and there is this, you know, we're talking a little bit about information, how people are receiving information and so forth and so on. And there is this entire problem with this reality where facts don't matter anymore.
Yeah,
to a lot of people, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You can.
It's reality.
I mean, man, come on. We got flat earthers walking around like right now. Okay, at this point of time in history, I mean, we got pictures from the moon of the Earth showing you how it's round that you could prove they are from the moon, and they still believe on flat Earth. These guys are using satellites. Okay. Couldn't operate most of the time if the Earth wasn't round. Or if the Earth, don't understand, hey, why do we need so many of them? Well, because the Earth is round. It's not flat. So that's why you can't see them. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, you can show people, hey, all these people were saved by these vaccines. Look, we had kids' cemeteries. This was a thing. Where we saved all these lives. Eh, whatever.
Or my layperson's research is worth more than your professional expertise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was telling Sam, and I know he's bored to death about this, about the drama that I had at our condo board here, where I was in charge was president for a long time. Mm. And that, you know, people were complaining about excessive dues and whatever. And I could show them, I told the people I felt like Biden because I could show them that, hey, the last 5 years, average condo dues in South Florida, where I live, are up 60%. Ours are only up 30%, okay,
yeah.
Versus an average of 60. And oh, by the way, we spent millions fixing stuff during that time. And your condo dues are up half the median. And they're like, right. We need to get rid of you. I'm like,
fine. Be my guest.
I'm like, and it doesn't honestly, matter. That's how up. I feel. Yeah. I, you know what? The thing is, I actually won the election, but I got so fed up with the attacks. I resigned because I just couldn't take it anymore. They don't talk to you. They don't look at the facts, and then they get personal and start attacking you like you're a crook, you're a thief. We're going to investigate you all. It's like, Oh, and here was a crazy tidbit. One of the guys that led this.
You can see where this is coming.
The bizarre thing. He works on his law firm. He works on this law firm. You for some reason, like, poo-pooed this fact. He works for an attorney that was one of the biggest defendants of J6ers.
Really?
Yes. Now, that's a reaction I expected from him, but he was like, huh? I was like, whatever. He was one of the guys, and I'm like, I'm not understanding. Why am I explaining facts to this guy? He doesn't listen to anything. And I saw his law firm, and then I click on the link, and I see the attorney that he works for. And I see, and I'm like, all of a sudden, oh, shit, look at this. He's the guy that's defended the most J6ers. This is how this all adds up.
Well, I mean, as a legal professional myself, theoretically, you do have a duty to, as an attorney, to make sure that people get quality representation. And if that were the thing, great. But if it were a situation where, hey, I really think these guys are great, then yeah.
This guy thought they're great. These,
well,
these,
then
they're, I the yeah. And it's like, you know, he really is all for quality representation. You know, one thing, there's something, man, now I gotta look up I can't remember the attorney's name, but there was one thing that was very interesting. He had a hearing where he was representing a 16 of them at one place, and he did not show up to the hearing.
Interesting if he were an attorney, because I knew there are a lot of, well, I shouldn't say a lot of, there are some people who pose as attorneys.
No, this guy is actually an attorney, and I looked him up. He had actually been part of a law firm where they threw him out, financial issues. One of his law firms went under, then he started another one. It's this entire what I always brought that up as an example is because I see this everywhere. It's like the anger level, man, whether you're driving, whether you're at school, how teachers get attacked by people, nurses, principals, hospital administrators, the rage at airports, airlines, all of this. I keep seeing this. It's like this is really permeated. It's not just the elections. It's permeated through society in general and even globally, for Christ. It's not just here, because these people are bent on certain. It's not just the U.S. It's a global thing that they're trying to.
One of the reasons I got involved in Democratic politics to begin with was because I saw this wave of nationalistic populism, and it scared the bejesus out of me.
Yeah.
You know, Assad, Duterte. And it's like, people were like,
oh my God,
what's even gonna be if Donald Trump becomes president? I said, well, all you have to do is look at the Philippines. That's what's gonna happen. And now I think it's like his son and Aquino's daughter or something like that. They're ruling over there. And what's his name? Maduro, who is basically Chavez 2.0, and the off day who Elon Musk is plumping for.
Yeah.
I mean, alternative for German, alternative for Deutschland, and you're going, what the hell?
Maloney, like, and you've got the Le Pen in France.
Yeah, Le Pen in France, who's decided to make her party a kinder and gentler looking mode of police.
Malay in Argentina. We had Bolsonaro who got voted at. It's just all over the place. Now, one thing I will say that the Latin American ones, the one thing is that they all are authoritarian. They all grab at whether it's right-wing ideology or left-wing ideology. But the whole desire of these people is to be an oligarchy, to enrich themselves in one way or another. There is no altruistic thing about helping my people. They really disdain a lot of the supporters that they have. But to them, they are useful idiots. And they go around and just, well, think about, for example, we're going to give tax breaks to the rich and the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. Like, who are the people that benefit the most from this? Most of their voters. And they are just like, yeah, we need you to go in there and like take them out. I'm like, what are you doing?
Basically a situation where whoever talks the loudest and the longest.
Yes,
seems to have the floor and the box. You're talking about how the anger in the world. Now, this of course started before Trump and before COVID, but I think COVID, 4 years, 3-4 years of COVID, has basically exacerbated what was already a poor situation. And I have to say, the isolation, while necessary, turned a lot of us feral. So we're still, I think, trying to, I guess, suss out and navigate how to deal with each other in a one-on-one interpersonal, in, you know, physical environment. And that was the other thing I wanted to circle back to, is that COVID, I mean, to be really bluntly honest, if COVID hadn't have broken out and gotten as bad as it had, I think we would be looking at the end of the second Trump presidency.
I agree with you.
I think you're absolutely
I totally agree with you.
And that was a big factor. I think people forgot how bad it was, because a lot of people just have the attention span of a gnat.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Like, you see so many interviews.
You're a woman after my own heart. Yes, that's exactly the reality. They don't remember anything.
They don't remember anything, and they misattribute where it was from. You talk about, like if you even ask people about, like, the pandemic, they associate it with Biden, not with Trump. You know?
And Trump actually cut those checks out of his own...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And to be fair, the highest spike of the... of the pandemic did occur at the beginning of the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. But there are things like people associate. One of the anecdotes I heard that was, first of all, absolutely right. They thought that these were personal checks from Donald Trump.
Yep.
But also, a lot of the COVID aid ended during Biden's administration. Now, the actual reality is the Democrats wanted to keep the aid going longer, and the Republicans wanted to kill it. But people blame the fact that their aid ended on Biden because he was president when it happened, you know? And similarly,
they were saying that they needed to end the aid. And
that's 2018. I mean, that 2018 Congress really did a lot of good, I think. And really, it's 2026, gang, and I get a little impatient with people who are talking about 2028 now, and I'm thinking, you don't understand, gang. If we don't have a 2018 level retake of the House, there will not be a 2026 that's worth, you know, that's actually competitive, shall we say.
Yeah.
You mean 2028, if not 2026. Yeah.
But I will tell you one factor, another one, not just the pandemic, but the one that everybody's memories are terrible, which it was the one that the inflation, which is the one that really, look, inflation historically has upended governments. This goes back, you know, go back to the Weimar Republic in Germany, for God's sakes, you know, how they got upended after World War I because inflation was completely out of control, and Carter. You know, I mean, Jimmy Carter, one of the things that in his administration, you know, inflation was, you know, raging as well. And that was one of the factors that really, you know, threw his administration into problems because of inflation and how interest rates were rising at the time and so forth. I mean, that was definitely a big factor. But, you know, they go and they blame Biden for the inflation. And the reality is I kept talking to Sam during, you know, during 2020, when Trump's still president, and during the pandemic, I'm one that I used to import a lot of containers from China during that time. So the business that I was managing at the time. And the thing is, a typical container right before the pandemic would cost me about $4,000 to ship something from China to anywhere in the Americas for the most part. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing shipping costs go like, it's north of $20,000 a container, $25,000 a container. Jeez. And I'm going and I'm like, shortages of everything. And shortages of everything. So all of a sudden, you know, I'm getting demanded more money for anything that we're buying. And I'm like realizing, okay, so that didn't translate to consumer prices immediately, but look, these are all leading factors. And it's like that entire wave started during that moment. It was like, it was during the pandemic. It's when it started. And then it's so difficult to explain to people, well, where the hell is that inflation coming from? And I'm like, start blaming Biden for the damn inflation when, I mean, it was a pandemic-induced inflation that there was all what the Biden administration do is manage it better than every other country in the world. That's the reality. And still,
but the people in our country don't, definitely in the heartland, don't seem to see it.
No.
And, you know, I wouldn't call it so much inflation as greedflation.
Well, but part of it, look, I'm a business guy. Look, supply and demand. Look, when you've got like everybody angling to get a container to put it in on a ship, you know, and you're desperate, you're going to start bidding up the prices. There's just, you've got, and it was crazy. I mean, the backup at the ports turned insanity. I couldn't find where the hell my damn shipments were. The people couldn't find them because they said, listen, the port is complete. We don't know where the hell these containers are. They would wind up, there were so many of them. One of them wound up tracking, oh yeah, we dropped it off at the wrong country. I'm like, oh, get the hell out of here. No, it was supposed to be in Argentina. Yeah, we dropped it off in Brazil. Sorry, we're going to have it. I'm like, oh, come on. Guys, you guys are killing me, okay? But look, one of the things about it, there is part of it that, of course, you know, like everything, some people will take advantage of their monopoly situations in order to also increase prices. That is always a certainty, is why monopolies are bad, is why oligarchies are bad. It's why you've always been a regulated capitalist, because I don't believe that unregulated markets always tend to monopolies, period. End of story. That's just the fact. Okay.
Yes.
And so, But you had a lot of real factors where you had shortages of stuff. You've got other stuff. And economics, unfortunately, those will drive up prices. And the other problem is that you start putting in artificial price controls. What happens is people say, well, okay, I'm not going to do anything because I'm not going to get paid. I'm going to start losing money because the other people are demanding more money from me. And then you're telling me that I can't pay for it. So to hell with it. I'm not going to do anything. It's always during those times of like peaks like that, it's always extremely complicated. But in the end, it happened in 2020 is my whole point. And everybody is like going,
4 years ago.
Everybody happened. It happened in 2020 and everybody's going, well, Biden is inflation. I'm like, oh, God.
But that did not affect the price of eggs in this particular.
Yes. The famous price of eggs, which I'm pretty sure that everybody complaining about the price of eggs had not bought a damn carton of eggs in recent memory.
I saw someone who actually got out the actual, I think it was Jamie Belay, who's a columnist for New York Times on TikTok, but he got out a graph of the actual like stats on the price of eggs over the last few years.
Hmm.
And there was a pandemic related spike.
Yep, there was.
And then it went way back down again. And then in 2024, earlier in the year, there was another spike due to bird flu.
The bird flu.
Where egg prices went up for a little bit. But it actually didn't last very long and was well on the way back down again. And you still had a situation where by the time we got to the election, were eggs higher than they were 4 years ago? Yes, but they were way down from the peak. But people don't like recognize that, and the story sticks. Yeah. Now, I promise we can get back to talking about other stuff, but I did want to let Monica finish her story of the actual being an elector.
Oh, yeah, sorry, we totally went off.
It's sorry.
Okay, it's okay.
We went on a tangent?
You had gotten as far as parking in the parking lot.
And she got in. Yes. Okay.
Yes. Got in. It's beautiful. They've decorated it for Christmas. You know, there's like marble and everything, and it's gorgeous. And they lead you into the Senate chamber. And the Senate chamber is very intimate, actually. You have your desk, and the desk has the very nice blue, your certificate and your, I sent these, I think, to Brandy and some folks where the actual certificate of the electors are, where you sign for the vice and the sign for the president. And the pen is like, just like it's a ballpoint pen, but this like has like the white quill on it. And I have since misplaced that pen and I'm a little pissed about it. I think it fell out of something or other because I didn't have a proper portfolio. I mean, this was like a big old, at least 11 and a half by 14 sort of nice portfolio, whole paper thing that they put in there, hard paper. So I have to figure out, okay, how do I get that, nicely framed, or where am I going to stick that? Now, my friend, Jack Aaron's a blessed memory. He was the elector last time for CD2. I don't know where he did it, but he had he had his whole elector shtick nicely framed and everything he had in his foyer, and it's beautiful. But yeah, you have the certificate that you're an elector. You've got like another beautiful certificate. You sign the ballots, is the nice ballots that they collect, and those are the ballots that are going to go into the boxes that you saw the girls have to, you know, tote away from the Senate chamber to get rid of the insurrectionists.
Right, on January 6th when they saved the ballots or whatever.
Right. Yep. And then there were, I want to say, 6 copies that we would sign, and those would go to different places, among which would be the National Archives. And so I'm wondering, oh, gee, do I get to see my own signature if I go back to D.C. later on?
That'd be interesting. That'd be cool. Yeah.
And the final thing that we'd signed was a document signed by all of us that basically verified. And I think I've kind of lost track of where everything went. But, you know, Steve Hobbs, I'm sure, is on it. Maybe you could have him as a guest. That would be kind of cool. Maybe you get Brandy to say, hey, Steve.
You know, I've known you in person, which is why I felt comfortable asking you. But, you know, we're a small, tiny, like, personal podcast. So, like, I haven't felt comfortable asking Brandy, hey, can you get us guests that actually matter? Because, I mean, we've got like 50 people a week listening to
things. Thanks for like dunking on Monica, Sam. Really appreciate it. You know,
No. Monica matters. You know, Monica matters.
You know, that's what it's all about. It's all about relationships and politics, too. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's not the smoke-filled room, but it's also not. I mean, you're talking about people who are running to be an elector who didn't know what they were running for, and people who didn't know what they were voting for.
Yeah.
And it is imperative, I think, upon the people, if they want to be involved in the democracy, you have to educate yourself and not assume that your internet research is going to save you. You have to ask questions. That's one of the things I did when I got involved. I asked questions of people who I might have called the old salts, folks that have been around, folks like Linda Tosti Lane, Kao Chulanu, people who have been Todd Nichols, professionals who have been involved for years and years and years. And you know, let's see. Anyway, but going back to the thing. So you go into the Senate chamber, very intimate space with the desks and all that stuff, and the galleries on, you know, on one side and the other. The gallery didn't look too terribly big, actually. But yeah, Shasti Conrad, the state chair, was there, and David Green, the vice chair, was there in the gallery, and some other folks that I didn't see, like my erstwhile colleague, Lynn Campbell, who is a Skagit County Dems chair, was up there in the gallery. And yeah, you cast your votes and you do the Pledge of Allegiance and they certify the minutes. Oh, and the guy actually, one of the people at the Secretary of State's office, let me use the seal stamper. So yeah, the official, I have a little thing that has like the official government seal or the state
cool.
seal.
I love those.
Yeah. So they use the seal for all of those things that we signed. And it's huge. It's
a big one. Awesome. Well, so, love these.
And then I think the most awesome thing that I thought though was I looked up and around so the Senate chamber is a square room, and around the ceiling they have engraved each of the 39 counties' names. Okay. So that was interesting to see that. And, you know, I had to find Snohomish. And of course, King is right up there by the dais. But Snohomish is like more towards the like the right side as you're looking at the dais. And we all had our microphones. So if we wanted to speak, we did. I really didn't think I was going to speak, but then everybody else did before me. So I'm like, oh, hell, I'm not going to be the only person who didn't speak. So I did. I said my bit. And
Do. Sam from the future here. I thought this would be an appropriate place to insert Monica's actual speech that she just talked about. So here it is.
First of all, thank you. Hi, my name is Monica Chilton. I am the elector for the 1st Congressional District. Thank you, Mr. Secretary of State. Thank you, Mr. Governor. Thank you to all of my colleagues here in this room today. I hadn't really planned to speak, but I feel kind of impelled to do so after hearing such wonderful remarks from my colleagues beforehand. Yeah, I was thinking about rights, and I belong to a generation that has more rights than the generation that has them now. I was born in 1973, the year that Roe v. Wade was decided. And yes, it was my hope that we would be able to elect a woman president of the United States twice, you know, but it just didn't happen. And I just think it's really important that everybody in this room and those of you who are watching, sorry, I'm very moved right now. This is a very awesome honor to be in this room with all of you, that we all rededicate ourselves to preserving democracy, which is fragile now, but with constant engagement can be robust and can stay robust and can champion the right, the good, the true, and the beautiful. And finally, I would like to say a quick word to the memory of my dear friend, Jack Ahrens, who was sat in your position last time in 2020. I'm sorry we couldn't keep it up, Jack, but I do pray that you look out for us and help us get it back. Thank you very much.
And now back to our conversation. Do, do, do. So did you, was it all little speeches about why you were voting for Harris?
No, not necessarily that. Just, you know, like, for example, Julie Johnson, she was, I can't remember what CD she's in, but she, among other things, she's a Native American, and she pointed out that there were three Indigenous folks among the actual electors that were there, which I think is like some sort of a new threshold. So even though it's kind of, in a weird sort of way, it's kind of a dark victory, as it were, because even though we've stolen the land, at least now they're back there at the table, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's important. And then we had some folks talk about how, gee, I'm happy to be an elector, but there shouldn't be an electoral college. And I get that. I understand. Not sure that that's quite the occasion, because one of the things that, I don't think it was Steve Hobbs, but I think it was, oh God, maybe whoever served as Sergeant at Arms pointed out, was how special this occasion was and how important it was to savor it. And And I did. And it was, like I said, very, very awe-inspiring and very humbling at the same time to know that, you know, you had that responsibility, that people entrusted you with that responsibility. And I know the folks in 2016 felt that they had a different responsibility. I think, you know, it is what it is, and that's their choice. But my responsibility was to, I originally signed up to elect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Right. But yes, my responsibility was to elect the Democratic candidate and the running mate. Right. And that's what I did. And
so just timing wise, that's interesting to me. They selected the electors before the nominee was official for the Democrats. Like,
yeah, well, he was basically presumptive.
No, I know he was presumptive, but imagine it was actually a contentious primary.
I want to say it was, it was like maybe a month or so before, a month, I would say, before that fateful debate. So
it's sort of after, like, assuming you had a race like 2016 or something, it was after the primaries were over, but before the convention.
Okay. Yes, definitely. Yeah. Well, I think there are some really late primaries that are knocking on the door.
They go through June.
It's kind of interesting, yeah.
The last primaries are in June.
But let's see. So I think that was, it was maybe 2 hours. Oh, the most important part, I shouldn't say most important part, but equally important part, is that Governor Inslee invited us to his office.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So we went over there and he had some nice words to say for us and got to take a look at his office, and he pointed out some things, including a picture, a portrait rather, original portrait of Abraham Lincoln. And he mentioned how his dad ran for, I think, the court and didn't win, but he ran as a Republican. So that was interesting. And you go inside the outside of the governor's office and you see all the paintings of the former governors, only one, Chris Gregoire. That needs to change, but that's just me. Yeah. And a bunch of us had our pictures taken, you know, not necessarily with the governor, but, you know, in the office, which is, you know, really cool too. And just for giggles, I crossed the hall and poked my head in the Secretary of State's office to see what that was all about. And as I got in there, they were wheeling in that big seal, which was on a platform it's heavy. So they'd have to put it there. But, you know, It was a lovely experience. It was easy to get out. It was a little tricky to get out because it was a different, it's not like the main entrance that they let you into. It was like a lower entrance and you took the elevator up to the main thing and then went into the actual Senate chamber. Oh, funny story. So my seatmate, CD2, Lona Wilbur, I don't know her. I couldn't pronounce her native name, but she decided that she would go ahead and try. So they've got these microphones. They've also got phones at the desk that are outgoing phones. So she's like, you know what? You'll live once. She picks up this phone at the Senate chambers. In the Senate chambers, phone's a friend. Uh-huh. First friend she phones goes right to voicemail. Phone's a second friend. And the second friend answers and says, hey, what are you doing? You're supposed to be at the Electoral College casting your vote. Hang up. I thought, well, you know, I was tempted myself to, you know, look up, you know, say your wife and say, you know, call her and, you know, just say it was kind of a kick. And she's like, well, you know, it would have been an even bigger kick if you'd been in the House chamber and called me from my own desk. So, yeah, you're right. But very, very meta. But I just thought that was kind of funny. It's like, girl or woman, rather, you it took some guts. I am impressed. So no, it was a good experience. And I'm probably talking because it's trying to reconnect. Hang on. Shoot. No internet connection.
Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again.
Monica's freezing. Let's see if she comes back. Message her.
Yep.
She says her internet connection went sideways. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Okay, I do not know what the heck happened. That was fun.
You're back.
It was the new administration coming in.
Yeah, I blame them. Yeah.
So you were telling the phone a friend story when we
left. Yes. Yeah. So no, that was pretty much it. I just thought it was just kind of cool that she did that. I'm like,
what are you doing? You're calling me now
to do that. That was pretty awesome. No. It's funny as we pay for Comcast in this particular household, I'm surprised that every now and then it will want to get Xfinity Wi-Fi rather than the perfectly fine, perfectly secure home connection.
Mm-hmm.
Very weird. That's my other thing about monopoly. I mean, you were talking about, you know, unrestricted capitalism or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we only have, I think, two choices, and both of them are kind of in terms of being able to select internet providers in this particular residence. So you're going, you know.
So
that's one of those things. Yeah, I know.
So any other highlights of the elector experience you want to call out in terms of your own experience or just general thoughts on how that whole thing works or anything like that before we move on to other things?
Yeah, the day was just really nice. It was, you know, the Secretary of State staff was really great. I wonder sometimes what it would have been like if, say, Kim Wyman were there and, you know, say a Republican rather, and you have that staff.
She was the previous Secretary of State that,
right.
For those who don't remember, the fact that Biden picked her for something national, it started the chain of events that led to my wife being in the state legislature to begin with.
Yeah. There you go. So that's the other thing. I mean, I think the Democratic Party invites. We don't, you know, we just want things to get done, you know, done and done well. I mean, the whole reason that this temporary budget thing actually passed is because, you know, we know how to govern, I think.
I agree. Look, even John Boehner is one that said it best related to this. That this entire generation of people that have come into government now, they're you know, in the Republic, in his party. It's one of the reasons why he left was precisely because they were interested on getting just attention, grifts, you know, they want it. They want it clicks. Everything they do is all about that. It has nothing to do with fixing any problems. It has everything to do with how they are going to get their grift done. That's it. And well, and everybody else can be damned.
You tie that to a whole philosophy of government that is that government shouldn't do stuff for the most part. Like that, you know, and that's not all. Like some of them are pure grift. Like if they thought they could make more money by government actually actively doing stuff, they would.
Yes.
But others are sort of philosophically very much in the view of like, well, no, government shouldn't be doing anything anyway. And so a course of action that leads to nothing is actually preferred.
And Boehner himself, he's the one who got rid of earmarks. So he kind of reaped the whirlwind.
Yeah, I mean, this is one conversation.
Well, that was, listen, but that one was one that was, you know, I will say that before that happened, the philosophical thought, hey, how do we make government run better? Mm. There was a lot of agreement. Oh, getting rid of earmarks will help.
Yeah,
and But no.
I think it's actually backfired quite a bit. And I'm not the only one to have said this. I heard it somewhere first, and then I've repeated it a lot of times because, you know, I resonated with it, is that actually earmarks were the grease that helped things happen.
Yep.
That's how people made deals. That was like, okay, I will give you what you want on this.
And I will get our, you know, park.
Pretty much. I mean,
yeah. And in exchange, like policy things that would happen as well. It wasn't just like your pork for my pork. It's like, I will agree to your policy thing that I otherwise would not in exchange for some pork for my district. Right. And it led to a lot more ability to make deals in bipartisan ways to make things happen. Now, of course, there's also been this whole like partisan sorting that's been happening that makes things more difficult. But I think the earmarks accelerated that process because it took away major tool that people could use to sort of paper over differences.
Yes.
So,
yeah, I'm with you on that. All right, okay. I think Monica froze again.
Did we lose you?
Yeah. She's either she's stunned by what we said or she's frozen.
Canceled.
One or the other.
Well, it was kind of
stunned. Sunny. She's stunned.
Oh, there, you're back. You're back again.
We were saying that. Damn it, we said something so earth shattering. You're just sitting there stunned. You're stunned. She's like, I mean, my God. I mean, look, we managed to stun somebody. This is what happens when you invite people, Sam.
Yeah,
you know.
I was hearkening back to when I was young and in college, and so I come from West Central Missouri. Across the border is Northeast Missouri. Back in the day, Harold Volkmer was a FDR Democrat, and that horse trading back in the day got a really decrepit bridge that crossed the Mississippi River turned into this nice, you know, pristine Harold Volkmer Bridge, called for him because he actually lost the election to one of those Newt Gingrich Republicans. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, and again, it's my own thesis, and maybe it's because I come from a different generation, but you're not going to get people, you're not going to hook them on ideology, I don't think. It has to be interactional. It has to be one-on-one. It has to be about relationships. Because if we basically toss somebody out because they have this really peculiar way of thinking, still, there's other things you can talk about. There's always a hook somewhere. And
listen, the MAGA hook, the number one MAGA hook is hate. Okay.
Yeah,
hate is an ideology, unfortunately.
You can't get anywhere with hate. You really can't. I mean,
they can't get anywhere. Look, these bastards just won the stupid election running completely on a platform of hate. I mean,
this is the thing about populism, and this is my own personal theory. Yes, you can organize. Yes, you can campaign. Yes, you can even win an election. The one thing you can't do, and I'm losing my thing again, which is really annoying. I think
you're still there.
I'll have you.
Okay. The one thing you can't do is govern. And that's why these things.
But they hate government. They hate government. They hate government. They think, you know, the absurdity of this weekend's negotiations, for example.
Should we take a break and actually have that as a topic?
You want to talk about that as a topic? All right. Okay.
Monica, can you stick around a little bit, or do you need to drop?
Why not?
All right. Okay. Come on. Let's take a break. Come on. We'll talk about this idiotic negotiations. Yes.
Okay. We'll take a quick break, and then we will be back, and we will start talking about the whole nonsense with the government shutdown that didn't happen but was delayed, and Elon Musk and blah 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 and all that.
Yes. We'll
be back right after this.
Okie dokie, here comes.
It's just my internet being stupid.
My internet being stupid is a new song we will make.
I'm tired. What's wrong? I'm really tired.
It's amazing.
Show on the road.
There's a road? There's a road? Oh my God, there's a road.
That one cracks Yvonne up every time we play it.
Well, it's not just that. It's that we get a guest for the first time in a long time. And this is we don't get, like, say, the Ray Lynch break or something. No, we get this psychedelic lunacy of a break in order to come in. Yes, which is actually hilarious. But, oh, God. Okay.
Well, she stepped away for most of it.
She stepped away, so most may not have heard it. So she may not have heard.
What did I miss?
Okay. Well, we're back anyway. So Yvonne, why don't you intro? What is the craziness that have happened for the last few days?
I mean, look, we had an impending government shutdown. Okay, that you know, and a deal had been done, and as usual, like the Republicans, you know, one of the you were talking about how hate doesn't work. One of the things about these kinds of groups of people that they don't like the government is that they can never honor a deal amongst themselves. Every time they will wind up doing is they think that everybody else is a crook. They will not trust anybody. So they will wind up the moment they see something, they see an opportunity, they will backstab that other person. That is a trait. That's how they work. Okay. And so this entire thing with the shutdown where they actually have a deal and they agree to a deal, and then all of a sudden
a deal that had been negotiated over the course of many months,
a
bipartisan deal, yep. The Republican leadership was on board. The Democratic leadership was on board.
Yep.
Hell, not even just the Republican leadership. They had, you know,
they had the votes. I mean,
I'm sure the usual people who would vote no to anything would vote no, but they had it all set. It was ready to go. And then
they go and, you know, Trump and Musk, I can't remember which one was first.
It was all Musk.
Musk first started torpedo, you know, calling for this thing to be scrapped, for this thing to be stopped, for this thing, whatever. And then they start demanding a $2.5 trillion cut in the budget in order to accept the deal.
So you're skipping a few steps.
Well, I'm skipping a few steps. Yeah, so, I was oversimplifying. Okay. I'm being the logical Spock guy to my being more like Captain Kirk crazy going. Okay. I realized the other day that this is how our dynamic is. I've just realized. Okay. So go ahead.
So here's the thing.
I got planning for a commentator.
So first, Donald No, so first Elon Musk comes in with a tweet storm lasting hours and many tweets talking about how this is a bad bill, how he'll go and he'll bankroll primarying any Republican who votes against it, et cetera, et cetera. And so that initial deal that had been negotiated over months and months died. Like they voted for it. It failed utterly. Like, right. And they were also trying to do it, by the way, they were trying to do it under a suspension of the rules, which required not just a majority, but a 2/3 majority to do. And so they were nowhere close. They were nowhere close because, and then they scrambled and came up with a Trump and Musk approved deal. That deal added some stuff with the debt limit, because that was what Donald Trump's demand was. Donald Trump came in later, by the way, only after the tweet storm, after, you know, then Donald Trump was like, oh, okay, I agree, this is bad. But only after everything Musk had done. And that first one died. The second one was a Trump and Musk approved version that added some stuff with the debt limit and had some more cuts and blah, blah, blah. Then that died too. That one died as well. And then they were like, oh, well, now what do we do? We have no plan C. And then eventually on Friday, hours before the deadline, they came up with something again. It did not have the debt limit stuff in it. It did not. And it was basically back to close to what the original deal was, although they did take out funding for a few things. Some of which got added back separately, but for the most part, they took out funding for a few things, but it was nominal. For the most part, it was very similar to the original deal, and they got it done.
There were two
things that came out of this. One, first of all, Donald Trump got a list of 38 Republicans who would be willing to vote against him from that middle vote. Okay, so he did get that. And then the Johnson promise that you mentioned is that apparently the deal to get Republicans on board, to get the reluctant Republicans on board with this final deal, was that you and Donald Trump and Musk, was that they basically promised, okay, they will do a debt limit increase in the in 6 months or whenever that comes up. Mm-hmm. But they promised they'd increase the debt limit by $1.5 trillion, but they'd make up for it with $2.5 trillion in spending cuts, which is what the Elon Musk's Doge thing has been promising that they want to do anyway.
Over what? Okay. I'm sorry, $2.5 trillion over what time frame? Because that's the other thing. I didn't see anybody mention a time frame.
Nobody ever does. They always finesse over those kinds of things. Usually it's the 10-year budget horizon, but you know, who knows?
Why are you like these people? The usual. I'm sure that they are thinking $2.5 trillion in 1 year.
There are probably some people who are thinking that, and some people who are thinking 10. They leave it intentionally ambiguous so everybody can read into it what they want.
Oh, wow.
I mean, and also
$2.5 trillion in 1 year is the most. Want to cause the most chaos in a recession? And like, just, I don't know. Listen, everything.
It's impossible. And the thing is, there was reporting, I believe it was in The Hill, that, you know, the Republicans who agreed to it based on this promise, uh-huh, They know it's bullshit, but they need the cover of the promise in order to be able to say that they agree.
This is the whole thing that you were talking about, their lack of interest in any governing whatsoever, and that it's just all about fluff and bullshit. And here's another thing. Forget, you know, I realize that Sam always reminds me this again. It doesn't matter to actually do it, because even if they don't do it, they will say they did and lie about it. They will just say, we cut $1 trillion out of it. They didn't do anything, but they will say they did.
And people will believe it. That's because basically it's getting to be to the point where they tell people what they want to hear.
Yep.
And whether it's the truth or not.
They're not going to go check.
Yeah, no. Even if they could, where would they go?
Right.
Who's reliable?
God. Well, that's why I keep popping Tylenol on every day.
Because of, Because a major part of this is make it so you don't trust anybody. Like, they don't mind that you don't trust them because it means you don't trust anybody else either. And so you're susceptible to whatever.
Out of, you know, Putin's playbook, as it were.
Yeah, well, replayed from the Nazis. I mean, I think the whole thing about, like, flood the zone and make them not trust anything, not trust truth, that was Goebbels.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So we have
the budget deal, but we've kicked out, like, Trump wanted to actually get rid of the debt limit entirely, which, by the way, this is one of those clock stopped things. Like, we should get rid of the debt limit entirely.
A second. Hold it. Yeah. Hold it. Trump said that next year he was going to pay off all the debt.
Oh, mm-hmm. he said that a few times in the past. Has he said it recently? I don't know. I don't think he's talking about
the grocery prices.
Yeah, he's going to take care of groceries. Although he did in an interview last week say that, oh, maybe not. That sounds kind of hard. But no, we have the deal. He did not get rid of the debt limit. He had the promise for another debt limit increase. Like, he explicitly said he wanted to have this crisis now so it could be blamed on Biden rather than in 9 months when it'll be blamed on him.
No.
You know?
Really? Nah. He would never do that. Come on. Nah.
There's two things I'm following right now. One is, and you've probably got this marked in your calendar, Yvonne, is January 15th. That is when the deadline for the longshoremen, when they were striking or going to strike, they agreed with Biden to go ahead and agree to an extension. That extension expires on January
15th. Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
The other thing is the emergence of this bird flu, which seems to be already at epidemic levels and may reach pandemic levels very, very soon. Now, when is that going to happen? And what are those things going to look like in a new, as I call it, Trump regime? Mm-hmm. So these people who have the attention spans of the gnat, everything's going to come home to roost probably within 2 weeks of the new regime being installed. Well, listen,
here's going to be the thing. Vaccines will be developed again, and none of them will take it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll have to go to Canada, maybe.
RFK will make sure they're not approved anyway for anybody.
Right. Well, we'll have to go to Canada or somewhere to get them. Okay. And, you know, the one thing is to me is to these people, even with so many dead, you know, I had relatives that died in the pandemic. Okay. I mean, some of these people had people die in their families and they still, like,
they don't connect.
No, they won't. They can't connect the dots. They can't connect the dots.
They connect the dots, but they connect the completely.
Well, they connect the dots that they want to connect.
Yeah.
You know, we'll skip over a few and, like, you know, this looks like a plane, like, mm-hmm. you know, something. I don't know. Whatever. But anyway, it's going to be. One of the things that is definitely very scary is what happens in another if we get another public health emergency like this. I actually, to be honest, look, I'm praying that it doesn't turn it to that.
Well, just generally any emergency slash crisis, like, you know, it just happened that the pandemic was the one that actually hit the previous Donald Trump administration. But basically, as long as he's coasting on things that are sort of acting normal, you know, but, like, as soon as there's a crisis,
it's awful.
To be clear, I despise Trump to my core, and I've done the worst thing is Sam knows this. I was not new to hating Trump even before he ran for president. I thought Trump was a scumbag dating back to the 90s. I mean, yeah. I'm always bewildered by all this Trump adulation, you know. So I always just, like, man's a terrible businessman. And so I happen to actually have the fortune also of working out for several years with somebody who was a big person in commercial real estate in New York at that time. Okay.
Right.
Who actually was my workout partner for about 3 or 4 years. And he told me all these stories about how nobody would do business with Trump on any deals because they all knew that he was like a fake, that everything was just all bullshit and that there was no way to ever do any business. So I kind of like had that background that he doesn't pay. He doesn't pay. The deals that he does are losers. You know, he'll always welch on any deal. It was just well known in the commercial real estate. And so it's one of those things that had me on that. But the one thing that I will say after caveating all that, that I will say that about Trump is positive. He's very gun shy, literally in terms of armed conflict. Okay. Mm-hmm. That is the only thing that I can say that I thankfully that he showed, because there was a couple of incidents where I do think that if it was a Democratic president, they may have launched like airstrikes or done some other stuff or whatever. There was this Iran attack that happened on this base and where we did a very limited response. Where I know John Bolton was chomping at the bit at launching some massive attack against Iran, and Trump said no. And so that is about the only instinct that I have seen that this man has that I'm like, maybe that could avert something, okay? But other than that, the guy is just terrible.
Other than that, we're sort of counting on like... I mean, if he does everything he said he wants to do, it would be awful. We're sort of counting on... We're counting on incompetence. And one of the things that have been said this time around versus last time around is A, all of the guardrails are gone. B, there are some people that he has brought on board that have spent the last 4 years trying to figure out how to actually do it this time. But the one thing I'd say is his cabinet choices so far are leaning towards the incompetent side. So,
yeah. I mean, incompetence likes company, you know, Trump is very good at serving.
Yeah. Speaking of incompetence in this, back to the events of the last few days with the budget stuff or the spending stuff, whatever it is, Musk, a lot has been said about how like Musk drove this. He started it. He pushed it. And he got all of the attention. And what does this mean in terms of and Musk's role going forward? And how pissed is Trump about it?
And that's my thing, because at some point, yes. Listen, number one person that wants adulation is Trump. If Elon Musk starts stealing the spotlight at some point, he is going to turn. He's going to turn against him. I have zero doubts about this.
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, yeah, definitely. Well, I think that was probably Musk flexing his muscle to see what he could do in terms of influence.
Well, apparently he can do a lot.
Well, yeah, but the thing is...
At the end, though, he didn't get what he wanted.
Well, no, correct. But he didn't get what he wanted at the end, although there were a few token things in there, so he can claim he got something. But... You know, he showed that he was able to throw a wrench in the works and stop something cold. Mm-hmm. The fact that he wasn't able to replace it with his preference, okay, maybe shows the limits of that, but he was able to stop it cold and, you know, cause a, 48-hour delay or whatever it was in getting this thing done. So he did absolutely flex that he's got a bunch of power right now. He kind of showed that maybe he didn't quite understand like what all the moving bits were and how to actually get something done. And I think that's what, I saw people talking about this in terms of a conflict between a Washington, D.C. culture of process versus a Elon Musk tech bro culture of just worry about the result and don't worry about how you get there, and the clash of cultures that will cause and was shown this week. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think there's several dynamics there. One is that Elon Musk has shown that he has a lot of weight to throw around. It shows that he doesn't know how to use that weight to actually accomplish a goal. And it puts him up against Donald Trump, because even if Trump hasn't said anything yet, this has got to be the kind of thing that pisses him off. Because There are all these memes going around. I mean, the Democrats are doing it intentionally, of course, calling like President Musk, President-elect Musk, blah, blah, blah. Donald Trump's just acting as vice president now. Like Musk is clearly the one in control. And they're doing just to get under Trump's skin. And the thing is, it's the kind of thing that does get under Trump's skin. And
he is petty. He is that shallow.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. No, I mean, he shouldn't even have been in charge of his family's business. Ran that into the ground.
Yeah.
I used to joke, I said, you know, that man shouldn't have been allowed to run that. He couldn't even run the Bluth popsicle, a banana stand, much less anything else. So I don't know. It's just very, very. But the weird thing is that people see themselves in him. They buy into that. What they see as glamour, what they see as wealth and prestige, and they think, "Ooh, I can have that. I can do that, and I can be that crass jerk and get ahead." And it just does not work that way.
Unfortunately, in many cases, they do get away with this shit. I wish less did, but there is a subset. There is a significant subset of these grifters. Me living, I'm not going to say unfortunately, because I like living in Palm Beach County, despite the fact that we've been invaded a lot more by these guys coming in recently. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I've met so many of these different real estate developers like this, okay, that I've had clashes with over certain things in business. Okay. And man, they all operate very similar way. They're all slumlords. They all cheat. They don't pay their vendors. They try to like just, you know, snow you with lawyers and shit, and you know, and they will just, you know, spend every dime they can on every lawyer to obstruct everything, and yet somehow, even after criminal actions against them or whatever, they figure out another way to get another $100 million to borrow somebody and bamboozle a whole bunch of other people. But it's a horrible. I can't understand how they. How they live with themselves, screwing that many people. Because I just cannot fathom it, but it's their MO, and they double, triple down on it. And
I'm not necessarily talking about those sorts of folks. They're kind of higher up on the Ponzi scheme. I'm talking about the rank and file, the people saying
that. Oh, those guys.
Especially. Yeah.
Oh, those guys are all useful idiots to them. They're all
getting screwed. Yeah, and I really haven't figured out how to, we say, oh, we want to educate them. Now the new thing is like, oh, well, screw education. That's not going to work. We have to manipulate them.
Well, this brings me back to like one of the things that I've said repeatedly on the retrospectives of the campaign, and Yvonne's going to be like, oh, there he goes again. But the weird thing was working. Mm-hmm. Like that, I think, and I'd actually said this for years, the way to burst this bubble is not by talking about how Trump and his cronies are dangerous or any of this, because people like dangerous.
Yeah.
People want that. People want like somebody to break up the system and bust it down. No, the mocking him.
Yep, mocking
and
humor.
And belittling him. The they are weird. They're weirdos. They're the belittling him as like, oh, look, he's like he's stupid. He's whatever. Like the mocking in general, the putting him down in that way, the making fun of him, the laughing at him, not being scared of them, but laughing at them. That in that, if you look at, you know, on myelectiongraphs.com site, when you look at the odds curve for how they were doing for the election, the entire time that the Harris campaign was being positive about themselves and mocking about the Republicans, they were improving every week.
Yeah.
As soon as they switched to emphasize the danger of Donald Trump, they started losing ground.
It started to sound a lot like the Clinton campaign, and that really bugged me. I mean, half of the Clinton campaign was about, oh, love Trump's hate, and like you're putting Trump in the damn slogan.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm wondering,
they made it about him again. And when it's about Trump, he wins.
And like, I'm just feeling like it's like, I think
they made it about the danger specifically.
Yeah,
I think the mocking.
I think the Pod Save America gang might not have been the right call for the Harris campaign, they probably should have done to completely different people entirely.
Yeah, I mean, they brought in a bunch of Obama people around that time, and I think this was their influence primarily. And
yeah,
you know, and there are all kinds of other factors, but and like we said, there were global headwinds. There were all kinds of things. They might have been in a no-win scenario anyway, but I think they actually came close, and I think they did rely on the wrong people and took the wrong direction in the last like 30 to 40 days of the campaign. Yeah.
And my hope is they don't do what we did after 2016 and went, oh, shit.
We
can't have a woman run for president. I mean, we had a glut of, there were 29 Democratic candidates in 2020, including Tulsi Gabbard.
No.
Yep.
By the time Super Tuesday ran around, 4 women United States senators were out of the race. I believe, and this might be a minority view, that 2028, if we get there, touch wood, is the prime time to champion a woman candidate, because our people, by that I mean the public, will have had 4 years of chaos and God knows what else, maybe pestilence and all the other 4 horsemen of the apocalypse.
You know, yeah, I will say this. So, look, I always liked Joe Biden. Okay. All right. I'm going to be on that camp. Okay. All right. But one thing is that I did not vote for him in the 2020 primary. Okay. Mm-hmm. I voted actually for Harris. Okay. At the time.
I didn't have that opportunity. Otherwise I would have done.
But I voted for Harris, and, you know, she didn't get the nomination. And, you know, one of the things that I hate getting into perfectionist squabbles is that, mm-hmm. you know, man, Joe Biden is a great person, and I had no qualms about the fact that, hey, if he's on the top of the ticket, I'm all for it, because he is a great person and showed himself to actually be a great president. You know, that there is no doubt about that. I mean, well, there is no doubt about anybody done, that was sane.
Even though nobody remembered, nobody cared.
Like, nobody cares. He got a ton of stuff done, okay, compared to many other administrations. And so the reality is that for me, for 2028, I'm one that, you know, we just, perfectionism is the one thing that keeps getting us into trouble and having these situations like this.
Where
you've got these subgroups
the people saying that because Biden had the wrong position on Gaza, they weren't going to vote at all, or they were going to vote for Stein or something.
Exactly. And it's just like, okay, you know, you're literally, instead of like, okay, you know, you've got one guy that's heading in the same direction you are. It's not 100%, but it's close. Instead, you choose to vote for somebody who basically will try to do the opposite, who had a son-in-law that basically said that Gaza should be flattened and condos should be built. And I'm like, how is that helpful?
Again, facts. Facts are irrelevant, as you positioned earlier. No, I know. Facts are
irrelevant. Well, I said fuck, actually, not facts, because it's like, you know, this is these people.
So. Oh, yeah, there's that. Yeah.
I mean, it's like everything is a what the fuck moment every time I hear one of these damn explanations.
Yeah, it's tough, because, I mean, I wouldn't say an older person, but I'm a mature person. And there are some.
I'm older. I'm not going to say I'm mature, but definitely I'm older.
mature years, let's put it that
mature
way.
Mature years, yeah.
Not young anymore, let's put it that way.
That's for sure.
And I was able to get, I think, a pretty good education. I mean, granted, I'm not Yale Law or anything like that, but I had a pretty good public school education. I got my mother's teachers when they were, I got my mother's teachers were young when she went to high school. I got the older version.
Ah. So that was mm-hmm. cool.
And then I wound up going to Northwestern, but I transferred back to a Catholic college to be closer to the fam. And I went to law school. So I got the education that I think I needed to, and the skill set that I needed. And a lot of folks don't have that these days.
But listen, do you understand that these people are like, expertise and knowledge are bullshit now?
It's like, oh gosh, I think it's Fahrenheit 451, isn't it? When he talks about how we got, how his part of society wound up getting to the point where they burned books, right? And it was about how they didn't want to marginalize this person or that person. So they wound up just basically getting rid of everything and nobody knew anything anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we're headed towards. And it is very, very scary. And I tell people, I feel like I'm like the prophet Jeremiah shouting in the wind sometimes. I say, you know, don't confuse information with knowledge and don't confuse knowledge with wisdom.
And don't confuse people that know how to make money with them being smart,
exactly.
Which is a bigger problem that we have.
I used to get on my goat a lot of times. I thought to myself, why am I not in a huge firm making bank? You know, because I've got the education. What am I struggling for? But then I realized money was not what motivated me. Education was. Arts were. And the only reason people who are wealthy is because they are motivated by money.
Yeah, wait. Hold on. not totally that. Okay. All right. Well, you know, now, there are, something there like are, that. You know, I will say this. And it's not the only reason, but the thing is that you have to be multifaceted to do that. And the thing is that that making money doesn't make you the fact that you can make money or you're good at one skill that gets remunerated greatly, say like a great surgeon. Okay. For example, a great surgeon may be very good at surgery and they may be very good at the procedure and making money and they know about the procedure and whatever. It doesn't mean they have general knowledge about everything. And that's mm-hmm. a reality of a lot of folks. That they may have one skill which they excel that gets them greatly remunerated, but you
also got to remember in all these situations when you're judging like the person who is successful, whether it be wealth, fame, whatever, there is also always a huge portion of it that's just plain luck. You know,
there is also luck. Skill matters,
but so does luck. So does, including the luck of your birth. Like,
yeah, you know, totally.
You agree. When you were born.
Yeah, generational things. I mean, I do not come from wealthy people. I mean, I don't come from broke people, but I don't come from wealthy people either.
But I think it's just that there is this spectrum of where you've got different motivations, different sets of skills, and what makes. But again, the one thing is that we have so many Americans that idolize just the fact of making money mm-hmm. as equating that with any smarts, and that is not the case. It's like there are so many other things that come into play about somebody being smart. I mean, we talk about, like, for example, I'm somebody that's business, you know, in terms of knowledge, I go and I say that what I have is broader knowledge, but only in depth in certain things. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the important things about that I say quality of the smartest people that I've met is that to know what you know and to know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And so if you're good at saying, well, I don't know about this, I need an expert, then you wind up excelling more than many others. And that's the one thing that I think that a lot of people right now, because they make so much money on one thing, they come to think that, well, they must know about everything. Mm-hmm. Oh. And that's not the case. But the other thing also is, what do you want to balance in life? I have a brother-in-law who works at one of those big law firms. Okay. All right. And is making that kind of money. Okay. And now I will say that I think probably more primary motivation for him is he wanted to make money, but he has six kids, one of them with like autism that is very severe. Yeah. And I think that one of his primary things has been, well, I need to make sure that they're taken care of, that especially, you know, that they're taken care of as best as possible, you know, afterwards, and make sure that every one of my kids has an education and that every one of them is able to be independent on their own, you know, and those things. And, you know, when you have six of them, and you want to like give them all something as good as your father did when you only were two brothers, you know, you only were two or three, it drives certain things. I think that everybody values, you know, certain things differently, and making the money. So some people value the money just for the money, you know, And those people are
nuts. For some people, it's how you keep score.
Yes, it's how you keep score.
What's the most choice wins?
Yeah, yeah. I'm one that I will say I do like to make money, but at the same time, I do it. But Sam knows that I'm like, I value my quality time. I like to do it in order to, I don't know, my son loves to go to Disney a lot. And I'm like, he's 12 years old. He's got autism. And I'm like, well, damn it. He doesn't know the difference between one cent and $1 billion. And I'm like, you know what? I said, fuck, make enough money so I can take him as many times as he damn wants, you know? And that to me is more important than most other things. So, you know. It's always like different what motivates and drives people. I say, Sam, I know wants to order pizzas delivered so he doesn't have to cook. He hates to cook. This discussion. Well, he doesn't. Well, no, he doesn't. No, I saw him cook. Well, it's not a lot of cooking. He does know how to put stuff in a microwave and in an oven. Sam, when we were in college.
I have a limited repertoire that I could conceivably do. But
Sam used to in college go make this massive bowl of pasta and stick a whole thing of butter in it. And that was his meal for 24 hours.
I learned that from you. Salt. You're the one who taught me that.
That's right. But I didn't tell you to hold that's true. I did teach you how to do that. And it was like his meal for a while, or just massive bowls of popcorn, which is like enough salt to basically like, you know, mummify something. You know,
exactly.
That was the things.
Preserves.
And the frozen rolls.
Yes.
Yeah, the little like crescent rolls and things. He had a little toaster oven. He could put those in the oven.
So
you get an endless supply of those.
Well, that could be an entirely different podcast to how you what you all cooked when your wife was taking care of her mother.
We didn't. The giant bowls of popcorn and ordering food delivered the entire time.
Yeah, I guess that's why the good Lord made Grubhub.
Yes, exactly.
That's you've got now you understand that, you know, if you told Sam, what do I want to make money for? So I don't ever have to go to a store or cook anything ever again. And that would be that's his nirvana.
My good wife, of course, disagrees, but I have been quoted before complaining on why I couldn't rent an apartment or buy a house without a kitchen because it was the most useless room in the house.
maybe a little kitchenette. I mean,
a fridge.
Whatever. You can put that in the bedroom.
Maybe a little bitty fridge.
I don't know. Well, it'd be like college again, wouldn't it? I mean, you have your micro fridge or whatever. And
Yeah. That's what he wants.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
You need to move back to Hampshire Hole.
Since we're going off track, shall we take another break real quick and then wrap it up with whatever's left?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. And Yvonne complained last time that the break we had was one with us making goofy noises and sound.
No, I did not complain.
And he said, if only that break had been the Ray Lynch break, because that would be more impressive for Monica.
Right.
As it happens, I pick these breaks randomly, but the next one is the Ray Lynch
break. Oh, thank God. Jesus Christ. So, I think that we're all complete. Well, I mean, we are nuts, but not completely off the rails.
So here we go. Here's the 2-minute Ray Lynch break, and then we'll be back. And I don't know. I'll pick something to talk about, and then we'll wrap it up. Here we go.
Okay.
No, it's not the beginning of the show again. We're just taking a little time to credit the artist responsible for the music we use at the beginning and end of the show. What you are listening to right now is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. The music we close our show with is Celestial Soda Pop. Both of these songs are from Deep Breakfast. Now platinum, Deep Breakfast was the first independently released album ever to be certified gold by the RIAA. Ray Lynch's other albums are The Sky of Mind, No Blue Thing. Nothing Above My Shoulders But the Evening. And The Best of Ray Lynch. You can check out Ray Lynch or buy his music at raylynch.com, iTunes, Amazon, or anywhere you usually find music. Okay, we are back.
Okay.
So I was thinking, you know, there are a lot of things on the potential topics list, you know, the TikTok ban, the Fannie Willis, the Gates report, the potential speaker race, all this kind of stuff. But since we have Monica, I want to get her take on a little bit, because in terms of what the Democrats are currently doing in Congress nationally, the one of the things that happened in the last week was this whole thing with AOC running for the chair of the House Oversight Committee, and Pelosi and company actively lobbying against her to get, you know, this guy was ahead of her in seniority. He's in his 70s. He was just diagnosed with throat cancer. He's part of the old guard. And I'll tell you my take on this is that, first of all, you know, when AOC first came on the scene, I felt like, you know, there are a lot of policy things where I felt like she was very naive, and her approach was very naive in a lot of things. But I felt like she, from the very beginning, had a lot of energy and appeal as well. And I think after a few years in Congress, she's matured a lot. She's grown up. She knows the ropes a little bit. Now, a lot of people on the progressive side seem to think that she's like betrayed them in some way because she's willing to work the system. But at the same time, I feel like this whole Pelosi putting the thumb on the scale and them going with the old guy rather than the young blood is a mistake. That I think, like, just in general, the old guard that's not even boomers, we're talking silent generation, still like having trouble letting go and not necessarily having the right approach to be like, we're about to enter at least 2 years, maybe four, where like the Democrats are 100% in the opposition nationally. And how do you make the best of that bad situation? And I feel like a lot of the old school Democrats are still feeling like, okay, well, we'll like try to figure out how to work with the Trump administration, and we'll do this and we'll do that. And to some degree, like, you want to mitigate the damage, and to some degree that requires negotiations, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like the just general approach of like, has not been working in terms of what they've been doing. And for God's sake, it's time to let the new blood in, even if they aren't going to do exactly what you hope they would do. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Monica?
I think this is might be one of those things where we might disagree.
Okay, that's cool.
The first thing that I really do wish a layperson would realize, and I, you know, when people say they get on their horse about, oh, why didn't so-and-so do this? Or why didn't so-and-so do that? I wonder what sort of things are going on that we are not privy to at all. And I hearken back also to my former congressman, Rick Larson, who is the ranking member of the Transportation Committee. So he's ranking member of the Transportation Committee. He started being the ranking member of the Transportation Committee in 2022. Rick was elected to Congress in 2001 or 2000, right? So that's 20 years before you get to be ranking.
Oh, there's certainly a put in your dues structure.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean,
and a lot of it, by the way, is deserved because you learn the ropes and you learn what works and what doesn't and what's important and how to get things done. And so there is a strong argument for put in your dues.
But I'm also remembering that both Bill Clinton and Barack Obama got to be president before they were 50. Okay.
Frankly, and I didn't vote for either of them. I voted for Barack Obama in 2012, but I could never bring myself to vote for Bill Clinton because I hated how he treated the women in his life.
Well,
also, I was more
I'm not even bringing that. I'm not saying about whether one voted or not. What my point is the age. Okay, the reality is that this was were much younger. You know, and you know, a lot of times
less than a full term in the Senate.
Full term in the Senate. I do think that there. I do understand how committee assignments and certain things that you want certain people to have certain experience, and I get that. But I also still see a lot of like not wanting to let go of power, and that's the part where I'm just like, look, guys. Okay, I'm sorry. You're already past 80. Okay, look, I'm like. At least for God's sakes, and maybe, you know, and by the way, Gen X has bore the brunt more of this, and it's not just the government, but across the board everywhere, you know. I remember when I joined Hewlett Packard back in the 90s, okay, and every leader that was in executive positions was in their 40s, okay. And I still remember how most of those leaders never let go. So we would get those jobs. Like they just wouldn't at all, ever. They just wouldn't let go. And when they would wind up promoting us into those positions many times, they would wind up giving us half the money they were getting paid, which I'm just like, well, you're just some young, dumb, whatever. Nah, you're not making that money. You got to pay. Listen, I'm like, what the? What the hell is this? Okay. And I think that I'm one that I get, maybe not talking about AOC specifically, just taking that aside. I know that Hakeem Jeffries is right now the leader of the House.
Pelosi did step aside. Pelosi did step aside.
Yeah, but she's still exerting a lot of influence.
She's still exerting a lot of influence. Yeah.
Yeah. It is the thing.
How much do we actually know that it was Nancy that did it? And the other thing is...
There was a lot of reporting that she was going around...
Again, how much of that is accurate? I mean, I posit this to you. You have a problem with age right now. If we didn't have the problem with age that we have, Joe Biden would be president next month.
I'm with you, and I would have voted for Joe Biden in a heartbeat. But here's the one thing. But this is, there's two different things in play here. One is, look, to be fair, by the way, like I said, I love Joe Biden. I'm like, look, I would have voted for a corpse against Trump. Okay, all right, you know, literally. I mean, if the candidate had died before the and it's still on the ballot, I would have voted for the dead guy.
Sure.
Okay. So there's this one thing, and it doesn't mean that I don't love it, but I do think that we look amongst leadership in this country in general. Okay. I'm talking in general. We have had a stint of a generation that basically has held on to many reins of power, whether it's in corporate America, political America, far longer than previous generations used to. In part because not so many of them lived that long.
It's definitely like there's that population bulge that's working its way out of their system.
Right.
But it's not just about age. It's also about approach. Like, I think part of the problem, and getting back to politics as opposed to business, although same thing may apply in business, there's a lot of, you know, this is the way we do it because this is how we've always done it, which is not working in the modern day and is revealing sort of a lack of understanding of a lot of dynamics. Like one of the things that was brought up as a critique of the Harris campaign was a lot of emphasis on traditional media. Like they were buying tons of commercials everywhere. And whereas a lot of what was actually reaching people was internet stuff that they emphasized less. They didn't do nothing, of course, but they emphasized less. And does part of that come from just having people in charge who grew up when, of course, that's how you do it? And also just, and one of the criticisms of Biden was he spent way too long trying to get back to, okay, the way we want it, the ideal of how we do things is bipartisan deals and we work with the other side and we make blah, blah, blah. Whereas we have a Republican Party now who's not interested in doing that. And so maybe he should have jettisoned a lot earlier and said, okay, we're going to go full speed ahead with what we can do on our own, which he eventually did, but it took him a long time to get there. And just in general, that a lot of the leadership that we're talking about, oh, they're hanging on longer than they should. But part of it is not just, okay, they've been around a long time, they're old. It's that they're still pushing old approaches where we really need something fresh.
You have to balance that, though. Here's what I see. I see folks who are very eager to try something new simply for the sake of trying something new.
Yeah.
True. True.
And at least specifically the proverbial case at bar with Representative Ocasio-Cortez. Yes, he is very media savvy. That is not the same thing as chairing an oversight committee. I don't know. It doesn't seem like the fellow that they ultimately selected was all that great either.
Well, the thing is, too, just as a member of the oversight committee, mm-hmm. She has shown on a number of different occasions the ability to use that platform very, very well. And so the idea is maybe because she's done very well as a member of that committee, mm-hmm. maybe she could do well as a chair. You're right. It's not necessarily the skill set. And she can continue to do well as a member,
Well, Monica, I will say one thing. My advocacy for something new is not just because of something new. Mm-hmm. I have observed over the last decade plus, we talk about the media landscape changing, mm-hmm. where the biggest influences in the media landscape are new media, not old media. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that the younger generation is a lot savvier than that. And for whatever the hell damn reason, the right wingers have been the ones that have been the most adept at using that new media, in large part because they used to be, listen, because their views were so insane that okay, yes, we're not going to put Nazis on NBC.
Right.
Right? Because that we're not doing that. We're not platforming Nazis.
Yeah, no,
we're not platforming, you know, people that hate homosexuals. We're not gonna go and like platform people because it seemed like on a general basis that seemed, especially given from where we came from, the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and you know, this evolution that we did in rights amongst mm-hmm. groups, that's not the right thing to do. Well, all those rails, like you talked about equal time or whatever, are gone. And the reality is that when you look at the most popular like platforms in that space, they're all right wing. InfoWars, Joe Rogan, all these damn people. And I'm just like, look, unless we bring in a generation that is as savvy as using that and using that power and harnessing it to communicate a different message, these people have an advantage right now that is difficult to overcome. And that's my thought in terms of bring them in younger that are allied to our cause. They know how to use that platform. We need them to use that platform. We need them to be out there in order, and we need to empower them so they can be heard more. That's my thing. And it's not, you know, I'm not trying new things for new things. I'm like, there is some specific hole that we have right now, and somehow that needs to be filled. And I don't think that I'm going to get Nancy or a whole bunch of people that are from her group to be TikTok stars right now.
Wait, so
I want to see Nancy Pelosi's TikTok dance. So
because a person can't gab, they can't be president, or I don't get it.
It's not that they can't. No, it's not that they can't gab, they can't be president. It's just that I'm not saying about the presidential candidate. I'm saying that we need to move more of those people into the forefront of certain leadership positions and places so they can influence the agenda out there. And it doesn't mean that they are going to be the presidential candidate, but it does mean that the social discourse needs to change where only the right wingers are the ones monopolizing it. Even on the Republican side, it's not that those people are the ones that wound up being president. They push for Trump, who couldn't do a TikTok if his life depended on it, okay? And probably needs his daily instructions on how to even post something on Truth Social, okay? So, yeah, no. But either we get that group in those positions. I mean, look at the damn people that he surrounded himself with in his cabinet. Like, guys like Steve Miller, for God's sake, psychopath, lunatic. But the guy, you know, uses that stuff. Alex Jones, Steve Bannon, I mean, who was a pioneer in that space. That's,
because I do have
another. Yeah, I was about to say, we're running up against the 2 hours, and Monica has somewhere to go. So let's give her the last word on that.
Yes, let's give her the last word, yes.
And then we can use then we can do the usual wrap-up of the show. So last word on this topic, Monica, you get to close it out.
I think that we need to do a lot more listening and a lot more learning and a lot less posturing. I think it's the time to do some reflection. And this particular holiday season, as Kamala Harris said, is the time to reflect and to go back with your families and to just think of what really matters to you and focus on a couple of things rather than try to fight the fire hose. Cause that's, cause it's coming, get your energy, conserve your energy, get your group of folks. I mean, don't silo yourself, obviously, but you're going to need your friends this for the next 2 to 4 years, definitely. And, try to keep your relationships together and take a step back sometimes, because I think a lot of times when we get to this non-legacy media stuff, nascent media, back in the days of the Nazis, it was the radio, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
We figured out a way to do it. I think to be a little more reflective, to be a little more thinking things through, as we talked about earlier, rather than, saying, okay, we got to do this, we got to do that, we got to do that. Maybe think those things through a little bit further and see where kind of the likely things, because we are going to be going up against people who, frankly, they don't care about our country. They just want to get as much money or whatever they can for themselves out of it, which to me is comical because we're only here on this planet for 70, 80 years. Then where does it go? And so I guess that's basically it. I'm going to try to listen more as I have done here and try to talk to some folks and see what they have to say, new and old, and try to use the brain of mine and hopefully form some conclusions that will work, at least in my own backyard, if not nationally. But I thank you both for letting me come onto your show. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, absolutely. And you're you're welcome to join us in the future as well. I had a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming. Yeah. Our wrap up that we're about to do usually takes about 10 minutes. You're free to drop off anytime you need to.
Well, we have to do it in like 2 minutes, Sam. I already got the call.
Okay, we'll do the speed version of it. But anyway, thank you, Monica.
Thank you very much, Sean. And have a good holiday season.
You too as well. Okay.
We have to do the super speedy version.
Hopefully she remembers to like save the thing. Yes. So the super speedy version, first of all, I meant to say this at the very beginning of the show, but we ended up just jumping into it. Next week is our prediction show. Next week, the link is tinyurl.com/ccpred2025. If you want to add things that you want us to make predictions on, Ed and Bruce have already added a bunch of stuff, but we need more. So if you have not done this yet and you want to contribute and give us things that you want us to make predictions on next week, do it now. We haven't decided exactly what day next week that we're going to be doing the show, but get it in early. Don't wait. As soon as you hear this, jump in and add things to the list. And then, yeah, so that's that. And once again, tinyurl.com/ccpred2025. And yeah, curmudgeons-corner.com for the rest. All of our archives, our old shows, transcripts, links to our Facebook and email and all of this kind of stuff, all the ways to contact us. And of course, our Patreon, where you can give us money, various levels. We will send you a postcard. We will send you a mug. We will do all kinds of other stuff. I'll mention you on the show. And at $2 a month or more, or if you just ask us, we will invite you to our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, where Yvonne and I and a bunch of listeners are chatting throughout the week. And Yvonne, do you have something in mind, or do you want to just jump out?
No, we gotta jump.
Gotta jump out.
Sorry, okay. We gotta jump today. Yeah, oh, sorry.
Yvonne's gotta go take care of his family.
Yes.
Who are still hospitalized in their bedrooms.
Yes.
Okay. Goodbye, everybody. Everybody. Goodbye. You know what I'm talking about. Have a great week. Stay safe. Have a good time. Oh, have a good holiday for anybody who's celebrating holidays. And we'll see you next week for the prediction show. Goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, that's it. Hitting stop.
Stop.